On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, I'm here with Scott Weberg of the Toronto Blue Jays organization. Scott, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Appreciating you kind of letting me be a part of this. It's a real cool thing you've been doing for a couple of years. So, my name is Scott Weberg. I'm the head strength and conditioning coach for the Toronto Blue Jays. Really kind of took a path from being born in Western Canada, a small town called Kelowna, was able to leave Canada and head to the U.S. to play baseball. Started at a junior college in California, a small town called Porterville, just south of Fresno. Got out of there, went to an NAI school in Des Moines, Iowa, Grandview University, played for Lou Yasenich Sr. From there, went to Morehead State for my graduate studies. Worked under Kevin DeWeese, the Morehead State Eagles there in Kentucky, and then was able to jump on with the Chicago Cubs, working under Tim Buss and Doug Gero. I was with the Cubs for 5 years, and then when my time there was done, I was lucky enough to come over to the Toronto Blue Jays. And been over here for coming up on 9 years now. So
wow, so you've been doing it for quite a while, man.
Yeah, a little bit. Apologize for the dog.
No, it's okay, man. It's all good. The dogs, like I said, they're allowed to interrupt if they want. So, hey, you've been at it for over a decade now. So I'm really, really interested to hear this. What is your best professional baseball story that you have?
Probably my first big league camp with the Cubs, working with a player in the weight room. Bussy kind of left me with, I'll leave the player unnamed, but anybody that's been around him kind of knows he's kind of a nut job, and he decides he's going to do a box jump circuit, and second jump in, clips the toe on the box and shins himself all up and down his legs. He decides to go in the training room, not tell anybody, grab every band-aid he possibly could, and bandage himself up and keep going. So,
and did it ever get out that he did that, or did he just kind of go on with his day like nothing had happened?
Oh, yeah, he called me out at stretch the next day.
Oh, yeah, okay. That sounds about right. It was probably his idea to do the box jumps, and then you took the blame because he messed up the box jumps type of deal.
100%.
Yeah. I feel like we all have some sort of story similar to that for sure. So I want to know what you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing.
Yeah. I hear this question, you know, that you've done a lot, and, I don't like to think of anything as crazy, and I know it's kind of boring to say, but, something that really kind of hits with, you know, in-season training. We've all kind of dabbled with different things throughout the year, and everybody has different ideas of pre-game, post-game training and everything. But I guess just more, you know, how micro-dosing has become a bigger part of our program design, especially in the big leagues with moving cities and weight rooms and different things that we're lucky enough to have up there. We're able to kind of hit a lot of different areas that we want. So, microdosing, just different stimulus and versus more, I guess, traditional volume training is I try and hit more stimulus and microdosing than I do with a lot of volume in season.
Yeah, I had a whole episode where Pat Trainer and I had talked about that, and we went into it pretty extensively. And for me, it just kind of makes sense in our setting, especially like up in the big leagues, you always have a weight room on the visiting side. So if you want to get guys in more consistently and just give them smaller doses of things, like a lot of guys really respond to that in terms of just being open to, oh, okay, instead of, you know, a 40-minute workout, I got 10 to 15 minutes of concentrated work today, and just being consistent and making that part of their routine, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, we ask so much of these guys, you know, we ask for, you know, pre-practice prep before they go to the cage, before they go throw, and then there's pre-game prep, get ready for the game, and then there's post-game recovery work and soft tissue work and training and conditioning and all these things. It's, you know, they got to play ball too, and there's a lot of things that obviously our coaches want to work on with them. So how can we be most efficient and effective with our athletes is probably the biggest thing we all have to look at.
Yeah, and I would definitely say that that approach, it can help you with that for sure. You know, 10 to 15 minutes of concentrated work, get in, do what you got to do, get out and carry on with your day. And then it gives them more time for the baseball stuff that, you know, might actually be what they need to work on anyways to be better. So
100%.
So what do you think makes a strength and conditioning coach successful, maybe in general and then more specifically in pro ball?
Yeah, I mean, we all have different paths, you know, and it's so cool to hear, you know, all the different guys that you've interviewed and just all of their different paths. And really, you know, we kind of all stem under a different leader or mentor that, you know, has really helped us become the professional we are today. So, you know, there's that, you know, really player-centered coach. There's the really department-driven, org-driven coach as well, that really – kind of helps you develop different sides of your coaching ability. But, you know, number one is your coach. You're dealing with athletes. You're dealing with more than just weightlifting. You're dealing more with just conditioning, and being available for all those guys is really something I found probably more than anything, whether it was in the college setting or private setting or, you know, in baseball, is just being available for your athletes, being available for your staff, and really just love what you're doing every day. I think probably more on the specific to baseball side is that availability factor. It's, you know, we all have time away from our families. We all have time away from the things we love to be a part of this game. And, you know, being available was one thing that stayed consistent throughout my career that luckily allowed me to grow in a lot of different organizations. So,
yeah, I think, and one of the things that kind of gets overlooked is, like you said, being available for the coaching staff too. I think that gets overlooked. Obviously, you have to take care of the players and everything, but even in, you know, your down moments, just ask a coach, hey, is there anything I can help you with? Do you need anything? Like, our manager had his kid in town and he's like, hey, you know, can he come work out with you early before the guys get to the ballpark? I'm like, yeah, of course, I'll help him out. And him seeing me work with him, his son, you know, goes a long way for him. Like, oh, this guy is available for my son. He really cares about my family and everything. And it just helps you build good relationships. So if you need something, you know, if I had to go to our manager to ask him something, we had built that relationship ahead of time where, hey, I kind of have a tough situation here. Can you help me out? Yeah, of course, you helped me out. So that's a big part that gets overlooked. I think obviously we're there for the players, you know, more so than anything else, but I think taking care of your staff does really go a long way as well.
We're a family in a family, you know, and, you know, definitely more part of my career in the later stages has been more on staff development and your strength and conditioning coaches that are coming up through the system. And, you know, we all remember when we were 22, 23, 24-year-old strength coaches just trying to get in, that we kind of starved for that information and really just wanted to get better. So, you know, we really seek out any information we can. And I think it's up to us as, you know, continuing in the game and being a little bit older, that we share that information as much as we can with them.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. It's not too long ago that I was first in the door and it was just, you know, it was all a little overwhelming for me, but I just wanted to take in everything I could get. And, you know, even now, like, I think the best coaches as they get older still kind of have that mentality and still look to others for, you know, constantly questioning and looking for advice and finding people that are doing it at a high level, like yourself, for instance, and just talking about things. So it goes both ways, you know, being young and being energized. But as you get older in the field, still keeping that same energy and that same approach for sure. And we're all just helping each other, man. We're all fighting the same battle for sure.
Absolutely.
Do you have any advice for others in the field, maybe young coaches who are looking to get in, or just, like I said, even older coaches that just want to stay on top of things?
Yeah. I was thinking about this one on the drive home, actually, because it's always like probably one of my favorite stories of me being a 21-year-old kid about to graduate college and, you know, looking for grad schools to go to. I think I want to be a strength coach. Really don't even know what that means. And I just get on the CSCCA website and I just start looking at every strength coach I can get a number for. And I just start calling and emailing every Division I strength coach I could possibly find, anybody that would talk to me. And just down the road, Matt McGettigan was at Iowa State at the time. And, you know, luckily he was one guy that called me back and he goes, so you want to be a strength coach? I said, yeah, I think so. And he goes, well, if you're smart, don't be a strength coach. Go to PT school. It'll be the best decision you ever make. Don't be a strength coach. Okay, thanks, bye. Ooh. So that was a little bit of a shocker, but luckily I was dumb enough to continue to go to the strength coach. I proceeded to do it for the next 15 years. So, no, it was, you know, it's really advice more than anything. Like I said, be available, be hungry, ask questions. Don't be afraid to reach out to anybody and everybody in this field. You know, anybody that's really good in this field wants to talk to other professionals. They want a mentor. They want to have those great strength and conditioning conversations. I mean, how many times do you sit around spring training till, you know, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, sitting at the field, talking to the coaches, you know, or your position coaches or anybody about baseball or training? Like, there's a reason that we're all in this game and we stay in this game is because we love it. And, you know, we really thrive for that information. So, you know, don't be afraid whether you want to, you know, give a call to the head strength coach at a big D1 or you want to give a call to an NFL strength coach. Like, you reach out, man, call anybody you can. So.
Yeah. Two things there. The first is, like, for me, spring training is actually really fun. I know some people dread like the early mornings and everything, but just because of being able to sit down, our whole staff is together, you know, for those 2 months. And just before you know it, it's like 7, 8 o'clock at night and you're still sitting in the office just talking about anything. And that you don't get that in the season sometimes, you know, that gets lost when you're, you know, the only strength coach there, or it's just you and your assistant. And so for me, like that part of spring training is awesome. And then the other part, like you said, is just, I mean, reaching out to literally anybody you want to, and if they're good, like you said, they'll get back to you and they'll enjoy that conversation piece. And if they don't, I mean, the worst thing that you're going to get is a no from somebody, you know what I mean? And
exactly.
We're all like, the coaching trees are honestly, you know, you're what, 2 degrees away from just about anybody, you know, even if you don't feel comfortable reaching out to a stranger, you know, reach out to people in your network and then have them reach out for you. You know, it's everybody knows somebody who knows that guy that you're looking for anyway. So it's not as big of a field as you think. Like, everybody's pretty accessible. And like you said, the good ones are going to be willing to reach back out and talk with you anyways.
Absolutely, man. And it's someone, like you said, within 2 degrees has a number or an email address. So,
yeah, it's honestly, it's true. Like, I talk to somebody and they're like, oh, you know this person? Like, yeah, I didn't know you knew that person. Like, oh, yeah, and he knows this person. And before you know it, you're like, 15 people of mutual like connections with that you had no idea that this person even existed. And it's like, oh, we all know the same person.
Yeah.
So do you have any continuing ed resources for us, maybe books you'd recommend or seminars that you've attended in the off season, podcasts you listen to, just where are you going to stay on top of things?
Yeah. I mean, I was dreading this question. One, because I learned as the years go along, I actually hate to read. I get crap for it all the time. I'm trying to work with some audio books and stuff like that. It did not go in well. Podcasts seem to be kind of the best thing that I like to go with. And obviously this is a mainstay on my kind of podcast list. I mean, I love TED Talks, just whatever information's out there. It's, I guess this is one thing that probably, I don't know if it makes me a bad strength coach or not, but I actually love meeting people from other places in the world and just really understanding, like, outside of strength and conditioning, what their challenges and successes are and you know, I've kind of reached out and talked to some, you know, small filmmakers that, you know, what sort of challenges and locations that they have to deal with. It's just, you know, a couple types of people. I like to, you know, I love talking to chefs, people in the restaurant industry. They, you know, they'd happen to go through the kind of similar things that we do, where it's a long road to the top and it's a lot of moving around and it's, the hours are just ridiculous. And they seem to be kind of on the same wavelength, actually, a lot of times that we are. So, you know, I follow a lot of podcasts, love the Joe Rogan Experience and a lot of things he brings up with just different people in the world. You know, Dave Chang is a chef out of New York that has a podcast and has done a lot of TV shows as well. Probably more in like the strength conditioning performance area. You know, I love throwing on the Pacey podcast, the Perception Action podcast. Jason Glass out of Vancouver is just a phenomenal human being as well. Physical Preparation podcast. You know, those are always kind of my go-to. The Strength Coach podcast is always a good one too. The Talent Equation, Iron Game Chalk Talk. I mean, it's the kind of list goes on, really, is anything that kind of comes up and piques your interest is whatever it is.
Yeah, that's the beauty of podcasts, is you can just listen whoever you want, and if it's something of interest, like, you can listen to it. And for me, the thing is, like, I'll listen and then I'll kind of let my mind wander about a certain topic that they bring up, and I mean, I'll miss like 20 minutes of the podcast, but for me and my own thinking, it's like, damn, I had never thought about that, and now I'm like deep in this rabbit hole of thought, and I'm like writing notes down and stuff, and but then I have to go back and re-listen to it because I missed the next 20 minutes of their conversation. But yeah. No, my dad is a chef, and so he gave me a Netflix recommendation, and it was about this guy who makes sushi in Japan, and like his restaurant's always packed, and it's like, I can't remember what it was, but I watched it and I was like, Dad, this makes so much sense to me, because this is like relatable to me as a strength coach. And I thought about it, like, the long hours that he would work when we were kids, and like, you know, he'd work with like famous people. He would cook for like the, you know, the Buffalo Bills would come in and he'd cook for the team. And I'd always think it was so cool. And then like, you know, somebody talks to us and they're like, oh, you work with so-and-so in professional baseball. That's so cool. Like, there's so many similarities that I'm like, you know, Dad, I have a newfound respect for you, like, and what you've done. And I've said it before, like, I can make a steak and it'll taste okay, and he can make a steak and it'll taste phenomenal. Like, he knows the art and the science of cooking. I just know the science of cooking. Like, I can just make a steak. And it's the same with, like, you know, weight training. Like, anybody can put weight on a bar and lift it, but, you know, the good strength coaches know how to take that bar and manipulate it to make specific adaptations we're looking. So I was like, Dad, this is, thank you for showing me this. Like, it just makes sense. The chef thing makes sense. And so I know where you're coming from with that, for sure.
Yeah.
So I'd like to do a lightning round with you. I know you got the dog back there. I don't want to keep you from her. My dog's waiting for me too. She's got the cone of shame on right now. She's had a little surgical procedure the other day. So, but yeah, if you got time for me, I'd like to do one.
Absolutely.
All right. So first question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
All right. This is like an impossible list too, because I mean, like I said, luckily I've been a lot of places, and, you know, between schools and different organizations and the private industry. I mean, I'm going to try and list everyone I can, but, you know, Lance Sewell is a collegiate strength and conditioning coach, kind of grabbed me at 20 years old and, you know, never kind of let go of me until the end, and just continued with the mentorship and strength and conditioning in life and everything. I, you know, I'm very indebted to him. And, you know, my first internship at Drake University with Mike Birch and Marco Candido. Mike's still there, and Marco's moved on a lot of different places and running his own programs. Those guys really set me up for a love of strength and conditioning. Then moving into my grad school, I mean, our head strength coach there, as I was a graduate assistant, really gave me new ideas and, you know, different ideas of periodization and, you know, really looking into more West Side work. Kevin DeWeese, who's now actually moved on to a firefighting gig where he's running their strength and conditioning programs as well. And, you know, getting into professional baseball, Doug Jarrow and Tim Buss, you know, those guys I'm forever indebted to them. You know, they really allowed me to come in and let my ideas come out and taught me so much about player care and, you know, being a professional and, you know, really just set me up in professional baseball to succeed, you know. And then, you know, when I kind of hit a bump in my career, you know, old catcher Mike Mahoney and Jason Pearson, and left-handed pitcher, picked up my pieces, and I moved back to Des Moines, Iowa, and started a private facility there with them. You know, and then luckily they were allowing me to go when, you know, Donovan Santos came calling and, you know, offered me a high A gig with the Blue Jays, and then just, you know, allowed me to kind of grow and move up to the system as an assistant coordinator, an assistant strength coach, and then eventually as the head strength coach over here. You know, him and Chris Joyner were big parts of my development, both as a strength coach and really as a leader, I'd say. You know, again, there's tons of people I'm missing here. My coach Lou Yasenich Sr. and Brett Davis out of junior college, you know, just helping me grow up as a Canadian kid away from home. And I mean, there's just so many people.
No, it's good, man. I've talked to somebody and I was thinking about changing this to your biggest influences with an S, not just influence, because it's so hard to nail down just one person. And the more stops you have in your career, the more people that really influence you, I think. You know, every place you're at, there's somebody new that kind of teaches you something and helps you become the person that you are. So for me, the list can be as long as you want. And we always miss people, but hopefully.
Just ruin the lightning round part of it.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I don't mind it at all. But the next question is, one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Train an athlete or train myself?
Both.
Train an athlete, pair of 24 kilo bells. Train myself, just a real good barbell and a set of bumper plates.
Right on. Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Professionally, you know, getting, you know, one of the hardest things people told me was one of the hardest things in this world is getting into professional baseball. An even harder thing to do is to get back into professional baseball. And to me, that was a big accomplishment, was getting back into the game and being able to take this thing to, you know, to an elite level where, you know, the only thing I wanted to do in my career was work with the top athletes and the top of the sport. And that was something that luckily I've been able to accomplish and hopefully stay there for as long as they'll let me. So, also professionally, I mean, luckily got to work with MLB over in Europe, covering the Netherlands region. That was an amazing experience all in itself. You know, I got to work with Team Canada at the World Baseball Classic. You know, never good enough to make the national team, so do the next best thing, try and be a coach. And that was a very incredible experience, just getting to wear your country's colors, and kind of leads into the personal accomplishments of I've spent half my life in America and half my life in Canada, and eventually received my green card. That was a big accomplishment, and you know, luckily getting to purchase a home down here is a big accomplishment where we come from. And you know, it's sounds kind of silly, but yeah, I mean, where you grow up and you know, where you eventually end up is pretty cool thing to look back on.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's all really, really cool. And the Team Canada thing, especially, like being able to represent your own country at the WBC is a really, really cool thing for sure. Last one from me. Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
I think you know it. I mean, it was funny, man, because like this was actually a thing where I started out as a strength and conditioning coach, and there was a real period in the middle of my career, early in my career, where there was a possibility of going down a different road. And, you know, I called up my dad, and same thing, he used to own a restaurant. And I told him, man, I think I'm going to go to culinary school. And he let me have it. And worst thing I could possibly do, don't ever do that. You'll ruin your life. You'll have no family, blah, 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 all that stuff. So being a chef was in there, definitely, you know, the idea of being a pilot crossed through my mind at times. And, you know, there's been little things here and there, I guess, just But that one probably sticks out more than anything. I mean, I think I'd love to be a chef.
See, my dad always made really good food for us, so I didn't really ever have to cook much growing up. So that thought never crossed my mind. I mean, I saw my old man doing it, and I was like, yeah, he makes great food, but it wasn't like, you know, I could do this too for people. It was selfishly like, ah, he's doing it for me. I don't need to do it. And now I'm an adult, and I'm like, shit, I probably should have asked him to, like, help me learn and, you know, teach me some of the things. Because I'm making the same 5 meals every week, and they're all basic, and, you know, I don't know how seasonings work or anything like that. So
protein and veg, move on. You're good.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But, hey, Scott, I appreciate you coming on, spending some time with me, man. If the listeners want to get in touch, where can we get more? Are you on social media, or is there a better place?
Yeah, so I am zero places on social media. It's probably one area that I actually hear a lot of people go to for some good information. I haven't jumped in there at all. So I'm a traditional old email guy. So just my name, scott.weberg@bluejays.com. Probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Perfect. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Like I said, spend some time with me, and we'll be catching up real soon.
Definitely. Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for everything you do for the society, man.
All right, everybody, that concludes this episode with Scott. I hope you enjoyed this one. Scott's been around and been in the game for a long time, and so it was awesome to hear about his experiences over the years and the knowledge that he's gained while working in pro ball. 3 things that I took from Scott in this episode: be available for your players and your staff, be hungry, and meet people outside of strength and conditioning. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.